I was lacking in experience. I was lacking in money. I was lacking in just credibility, which ties into experience. So, and education too. I didn't know, you know, what I was doing initially. So the answer to, or once you identify what you're lacking in, then you come up with solutions for how you can solve those challenges.
Hello and welcome to Pillars of Wealth Creation, where we talk about creating financial success with a special focus on business and real estate. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer. Now, let's get to it. Are you ready to start investing in real estate today but don't know where to start? Sometimes investing can seem way too complicated, but it actually couldn't be any easier than with homeinvest.com. You know the co-founder and my friend Nate Armstrong. He appeared on episode 20, and if you haven't heard it, go back and listen to it, episode number 20. Home Invest is a company that allows you to invest in turnkey real estate. Their goal is to build powerful investment tools that make real estate investing accessible to everyone. They have contractors and property managers available for you with the click of your mouse. While other real estate agents can only offer a property, Home Invest brings you a full turnkey package that allows you to diversify your investments, earn passive income, and start building equity in properties. Their simple, intuitive design allows newcomers and experienced investors alike to hit the ground running and to be able to choose the properties when they want and where they want. View easy-to-understand charts and data to allow you to buy in only a few clicks or just a simple phone call. With Home Invest, you'll be building your portfolio as quickly or as slowly as you would like. And right now, Home Invest is giving our listeners, Pillar of Wealth Creation listeners, a free course on how to finally win in real estate investing. So go to homeinvest.com/pillars. That's homeinvest.com/pillars to claim your free course today. Hello and welcome to Pillars of Wealth Creation. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer. With me, I'm excited to have Joel Fairless on the show. Joel, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Nice to be on the show, my friend.
Yeah, awesome. Well, I appreciate you being on the show. And Joe is a fellow podcaster, the best real estate investing advice ever, who has done what you're at almost
a lot.
By the time this airs, I think you'll be over 1,300 episodes. That's awesome. So you do a daily podcast. So that's like 3.5 years of a podcast every single day, isn't that?
That's right. 7 days a week.
7 days a week. That's impressive. You are a machine. I don't know if I could handle that, but hey, you're doing awesome. And so great show. If anybody hasn't heard it, they need to check it out. So you're also a multifamily syndicator. You've got over 2,000 units. You can explain more.
3,000.
3,000. Mm-hmm. So it changes every time I talk to you. I think you get 500 more. So I can't keep up. I don't think anybody can. So Joe, with that, why don't you tell us a little bit more about who you are and what you got going on?
Well, who I am is someone who is focused on growth and contribution and helping others along the way, and knowing that the law of reciprocity will definitely take care of myself and my family whenever I do that. That's who I am. As far as what I do to deliver on that is I buy apartment communities with accredited investors. And as you mentioned, we've got, or as we came to an agreement on, I've got over 3,000 units. My company is Ashcroft Capital, and we buy value add apartment communities and increase the value primarily through interior renovations. And then we realize that value through refinances and ultimately the sale of the properties. I've got the Daily Real Estate Investing Podcast. Just so, you know, a peek behind the curtain a little bit, I don't actually interview people every single day. Otherwise, I'd go insane if I'm interviewing people on Saturdays and Sundays and every day during the week. I batch the interviews. So I have one interview day during the week, and I interview about 8 or 9 people that day. And then I'm able to have interviews throughout, you know, in the future. It might not be as intense as it sounds, but still doing that many, and doing over 1300 and been doing it every single day, have an episode release every single day has been a, quite the journey. Other than that, I am heavily involved in different philanthropic efforts. I'm on the board for Junior Achievement, and I also, along with my wife, we are launching something called Best Ever Causes that highlights a local nonprofit or just an organization that needs some money, and we donate some money and we highlight their cause to help so others can help them along the way. And that will be launching in approximately 1 month.
Oh, that's awesome. That's cool. So yeah, Junior Achievements, that's something I've become involved in as well, which is a great organization. So that's cool as well. So I guess the most impressive thing about your podcast is you've had, you know, close to 1300 guests, and that's got to be a challenge of finding these guests. So how do you go about doing that? How do you find 1300 guests?
Well, the short answer is I don't do it anymore. Right. I've got a full-time team member who does it along with social media and some other things for my company. But when I started, I did everything with the podcast. I found the guests, did the interview, was coordinated the call, did the interview, edited, taught myself editing software, edited the podcast, edited in the music, then published it, formatted it, and then let the guests know that they were in, the episode was live. So I've now all I do is I simply jump on a call with the people I'm interviewing, and that is it. I save a file, upload it on Dropbox, and then that's it.
Yeah,
it's magic happens after that. So how I found people initially, whenever I was doing it, was just people who I knew. And then asking for recommendations from others who I interview. So, you know, not rocket science or anything. Sure. I still am active on BiggerPockets. And that's, you know, I'm sure most people who are listening to this podcast know about BiggerPockets, but it's a really good real estate investing forum. Lots of great content. So I was a respected and am a, you know, got a lot of votes, so respected person in that community, and people would reach out to me and I'd reach out to them initially. What we look for with guests is one of two things. One is they are actively doing real estate deals, and they also have some a large-ish audience. Sometimes it's not both. Sometimes we have an entrepreneur who has a large audience but isn't actively doing deals, but they can teach us about things, teach us entrepreneurial tips that will be helpful for us as real estate entrepreneurs. For example, Jillian Michaels, the fitness gal, yeah. Interviewed her. And then most of the interviews are real estate investors who are doing some wonderful things. I've interviewed you, learned a lot from interviewing you, and, you know, interviewed other investors too.
Yeah. And one of the benefits of having a podcast among others is you get to learn a lot and get to hear other people's stories and mistakes and, all that along the way. So it's, very powerful to be able to have that among other things. So, Let's kind of turn over to your real estate business, because that's extremely impressive. You've got 3,000 units, over 3,000 units, and you basically started with multifamily, with large multifamily. I think you bought what, 3 or 4 single family houses, mm-hmm. and then you went right into multifamily. How did you do that? Because, I mean, nobody does it, right? Or very few people. They very few people go from a single family to 160-ish unit that you did.
Yeah, the key is to identify where you are lacking when you start out. And ultimately, I was lacking in basically all the categories. I was lacking in experience. I was lacking in money. I was lacking in just credibility, which ties into experience. So, and education too. I didn't know, what I was doing initially. So the answer to, or once you identify what you're lacking in, then you come up with solutions for how you can solve those challenges. Because, yeah, I love the Tony Robbins TED Talk where he gives Al Gore a high five. I forget the name of it. Just search Tony Robbins TED Talk. And Tony Robbins talks about the reason why people fail isn't because the lack of resources, it's the lack of resourcefulness. So ultimately, it's about how resourceful we want to be. And then if we're resourceful, then we'll make it happen. We'll figure out a way. Well, that's all well and good. However, in order to make it happen and be resourceful, we have to be aware of where we need help. And then the key is to have alignment of interests with your partners who you're bringing in to supplement those areas of weakness where you need help. That's the key. So how I went from 4 single family homes to a 150 plus apartment community is through partnerships and alignment of interests. So the challenge that we have starting out from singles to large stuff is that one, we've never done something that large before. So we likely will have a hard time getting funding for it, as you know, which makes sense, right? We should have a hard time getting funded for something if we haven't done it before. And then two, just the getting the deal itself awarded to us, because brokers are going to be really suspicious, as well as the seller and then the lender, to actually get financing for it. Because, you know, they're, or not suspicious, but skeptical of our execution. So specifically how I had alignment of interest, starting out, is I asked the brokers to, actually, I didn't ask, it was presented to me. And the reason why it was presented to me is because they saw it was going to be a challenge for me to close the deal. The brokers put in their commission into the deal to be owners with me in the deal. So they got $317,500. There's that number. $317,500 in commissions on the deal. And they put it back into the deal to get ownership in the deal with me. So through that, I've got the seller's broker partnering with us. So clearly, him and his team want me to close the deal because they are willing to partner on it. And also, it gives my investors some comfort level, because they're able to, they see that people who do have the experience are putting their own money in the deal. From a lender standpoint, that's going to be a challenge starting out. So one solution would be to do create a financing structure, one. Or two, you bring on other people who have that experience and you give up some portion of the general partnership ownership in the deal.
Yep.
That can vary depending on what level of experience you have and, you know, what how much of a maybe they're balance sheet partners too. So, you know, that can vary. From a creative financing standpoint, you could do something called a master lease. And there's that I have done a master lease before, and I don't do them now because we prefer to get our own debt on properties, and it's nice and cleaner transactions. But starting out, in order to be more creative, you can do something called a master lease, where basically the owner is still on the loan, so you don't have to get underwritten to the degree that you usually would, because the current owner is still on the loan, but you do still need lender approval. That's something that most people who talk about master leases or who sell master lease programs, they don't tell you about, right? That you need to get the owner or the lender's approval in writing, because most likely the master lease will violate some covenant in the loan terms. So you need to get that approval. Otherwise, you're in jeopardy of losing all the money that you put into it because it goes against the original loan term. So always get the lender's approval if you do a master lease in writing. I actually delayed closing a month because of it. It was a very awkward situation. I'd never closed on anything this large before. And in fact, I'd never been to a closing table because all my homes I bought remotely.
Yeah.
And I go there surrounded by a bunch of attorneys and the seller and his family and the brokers. And I said, we can't close. it was very awkward. But you want to, so you, that is one way that you can do it. That's a whole nother conversation for master leases, but yeah. Have alignment of interest. So let's go a little bit more high level now, just to summarize. We want alignment of interest with our partners. If you can get the brokers to invest in deal, great. If you can do a creative financing, there's another way. If you can get your property management company, I've done this before. I've partnered with my property management company. They have brought money to the deal, and in exchange, they receive ownership in the deal, and there's also a stronger alignment of interests. Now, the disadvantage is if you have to fire them as property managers, they're still on the general partnership side with you. Yeah. And guess what? I've had to do that. And it's awkward, but it's doable.
Yeah.
If you approach it the right way, a book I recommend reading is Crucial Conversations. It talks about how to have tricky conversations when the stakes are high and opinions vary. So those are some ways.
What you did is what people say you can't do, right? Most people are saying you can't, you got to start small, work your way up and eventually get there. But you went from a single family to 150 plus, and now you're buying 200 plus unit buildings. Take us through that mind shift of, like, you went from a single family up to this big property. How did that happen? How did that work? And
I'd like to say the philosophy that I approach things with, and that is, the world will tell you you're too young, too inexperienced until the next day they tell you you're too old and too have too much experience. There's really no perfect spot. Yeah. Either you're too young, you got too little experience, or you're too old and you got too much experience. So the mindset is knowing that it's possible because others have done similar things, and everyone listening to this interview, well, you know it's possible. So now you just be resourceful and have alignment of interest with the partners, and be attractive enough to attract the right partners to your business. And I think that's the key, or that's one of the keys. And in order to be attractive, the deal needs to be desirable, and you have to be a person that people want to work with. I mean, that's the true sign of a leader, is someone who can attract the best talent and maneuver to an objective that is mutually beneficial for all parties. When you have those qualities, then you can do some powerful things, and a period of time that is much faster and done in a safe way than what's typical. So I would focus on some of those qualities and honing some of those qualities.
So how do you become attractive then?
Well, you become attractive through taking those leadership skills where you one need to be someone who people want to be around. So you do what you say you're going to do. Yeah. You're a person of your word. I mean, it goes back to some of the core characteristics of being a good person. If maybe do a test, what would your best friend that you've had the longest say about you, pros and cons? Because that person, he or she, will be able to have some pretty candid feedback and some pretty good insight on who you are, or at least who you've been throughout this point in time. Are you a person of your word? Are you a person who, when you say you're going to do something, you'll do it? And the weird thing, I find it weird, the weird thing is that more often people don't do what they say they're going to do. I just find that weird because it's just something that I've always done, and I'll do it to a degree that it's not typical where, you know, if I say I'm going to follow up, I'll make sure I follow up. Or if I say I'm going to, do something that needs to be done later, it will happen. And if there's a delay, then I'll let you know about it along the way and say, hey, it got delayed and here's reasons why, and I'll get it done in XYZ time. And I just found, throughout my journey as an entrepreneur, people just don't do that. It's uncommon for people to do what they say they're going to do consistently. So that's something right there. And people can pick up on that.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think people?
I think it's instant gratification culture that we have.
Sure.
We want something when we want it, and we aren't going. I mean, generally, people aren't going to put in the consistent effort to make things happen over a long period of time. Instead, it's easier to get distracted on social media or by some other new strategy or something else. And, that's just how it is. That's just the way the world works. Yeah. So that's a good thing for those of us who are consistent and do what we say we're going to do, almost to a fault, but not quite. I said almost to a fault. Not quite to a fault, because you don't want to do something because you said you're going to do it and you know you're jumping off a cliff, right?
Yeah.
Like it's, and metaphorically speaking and quite literally, obviously. So it's being able to revise the approach, but let those people know who you committed to along the way. Hey, I know I mentioned I'm going to do this. I got to make an update and to the timeline or to what I said I was going to do. And people really respect that.
Yeah, and I would say you've been a master at that because you've got a daily podcast, so you're doing that every single day for 1,200 some odd episodes. You're buying 200 plus unit buildings, 1980 or newer, whatever your whole stipulation is, but you're consistently doing it the way you said you're going to do it. And I'm sure there's other things, many other things that I could mention that I don't know about. But yeah, you're consistently doing what you say you're going to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The business relationships that work out and don't work out, those individuals, regardless of it working or not working out, will say that I followed through with what I said I was going to do. I'm a man of my word.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, going back to my Texas roots, I was talking to someone last night. I was having dinner with someone last night, and he asked me, what do you miss about Texas? I live in Cincinnati now. What do you miss about Texas? And there's something about Texas where your word is your bond. And again, I mean, there's all sorts of people in Texas. not everyone's like this, but just there's a cultural thing about it. And I miss the cultural thing. It's not a knock on Cincy or, you know, I lived in New York City for 10 years. Every city and every area has its own culture and pros and cons. But just one special thing about Texas in particular is, you know, it's the handshake and your word goes a long way. And, you know, for everyone listening who are like, oh man, I really wanted to get into, you know, some tactical stuff on apartment investing stuff. Trust me, there are books out there. There's blog forums. I'm actually writing a book, how to the best real estate investing syndication book. I can't remember the title, but it's about apartment syndication. It's got best ever in there to keep the branding consistent. That's going to be coming out in about a month or two on how to syndicate an apartment building from start to finish. So there's tactical things out there, but the thing is, Tony Robbins talks about this, 80% is psychology, 20% is mechanics. And I thought that was a bunch of BS whenever I heard it and I didn't have any money. But it's true, because the tactics are available. I mean, they're pretty darn easy to find. The challenge is the mindset and honing that and making sure that we live in a world of abundance, even if we don't have financially an abundant amount of money. If we're really honest about where we're at in life relative to where others are on the face of the earth, then we do have abundance in some categories if we really look at it and approaching it that way. And you asked at the very beginning of our conversation, who am I? I told you who I am. I didn't say I was a real estate investor. I'm someone who gives back. I want to contribute. I want to grow. And when we approach it that way, we can have 3,000 units, $265 million worth of apartment communities or more, or whatever, or that type of stuff, which I have now with my business partner and our investors.
Yeah. Cool. That's awesome. Let's shift gears a little bit. What's one of your biggest mistakes and how did you learn from that?
Lots of mistakes. I actually do a presentation on mistakes that I made on my real estate deals. A couple of them. One is assuming that apartments are the same management approach as single family homes. That's a big old mistake I made initially. What I learned from it is they are not. It's much more involved than that. With my single family homes, I look at the P&L statement once a month, maybe, and that's it. Apartments, it's much more involved. Even if you have one apartment building, it's much more involved. It's a weekly thing at minimum, where you're looking at the different key performance indicators from, you know, pre-leased occupancy, scheduled move-outs, evictions, collected income, maintenance requests, how many are maintenance requests are pending. I mean, all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
So that is one area that I have changed my approach. And another is assuming that, and this is a dumb one, but that's just, you know, I was starting with little education. Now I've become educated. I can't believe it, but I thought occupancy, when someone said the apartment community was 95% occupied, I thought that 95% of the people were paying. But there's a difference between economic occupancy and physical occupancy. So I have learned the hard way that physical occupancy can be 95%, but economic could be 20%. It wasn't 20, but it was around 60, 65%.
Wow.
So, you know, there's a big difference in occupancy and economic occupancy. And then lastly, from a single family home standpoint, my fourth house I bought was, and when the dust settled, I about broke even, but it cost about $10,000 more in repairs than I thought it would. And the reason why is, one, I didn't do the right due diligence, but really, I didn't find the right contractor. I was in New York City at the time. The house is in Fort Worth, and I hired the wrong contractor. Think he was sneaking some money over to himself and not doing the work. And I think I was the only company or only person he was being employed by at the time, which is usually not a good thing if it's just a little single family home, cosmetic stuff. So, you know, the lesson there is qualify the contractors more than just a family friend. It was actually a family friend. Instead, call references, even if it's a family friend. So there's a learning there.
Yeah. Yeah. Give us three factors for us to become successful. You know, that something that you've done to be successful.
I am for my clients. So I have a consulting program on apartments, yeah. And I also have investors. So for my clients and my investors, I am the most responsive person they've ever come across in their entire life, period. Mm-hmm. Most responsive person ever. Doesn't mean when they call, I immediately answer, because, you know, if I'm talking to someone else, I can't answer. However, I follow up with them very quickly thereafter. And everyone who works with me, in clients or investors, they'll tell you that. So that's one key, being incredibly responsive. And the reason why is because with my investors, I mean, they're investing money into our deals that we're buying together. Right. I mean, large chunks of money. My largest investors invested over $20 million with us.
Wow.
So the same responsiveness that I have with him, I have with investors who have invested the minimum, $50,000 with us. That's the same level of responsiveness that I have. And when we, you know, when people are investing their money with us, you know, that's a, you know, a priority for me to get back to them. That's one. Two is we've talked about already, resourcefulness. I'll find a way to make it happen. I just will. That's just how I am. And this has been a core belief of mine ever since I can remember. I've always thought that I'll find a way to make it happen, that there's a solution. I've always thought that to anything. I remember thinking that when I was in high school about something. I just always think that there's a solution. I'll find a way to make it happen. And it goes back to, you know, what we were talking about earlier, having alignment of interest and partners and things like that. So that's the second thing. Resourcefulness. So responsiveness, resourcefulness. And the third is surrounding yourself with the right people who you can constantly learn from. You know, I've learned from over 1,300 real estate investors and entrepreneurs. That's a whole lot of people who I've had one-on-one conversations with for approximately 25 minutes. And I've asked them the questions that I selfishly want to know that are also helpful for others who are listening to the show. First thing I did when I moved to Cincinnati is I started a meetup to make friends and to build a community. Today we got our monthly meetup, and there's about 40, 45 people who are going to be attending. We do that every month. That's developed into other friendships. So surround yourself with the right people who you can learn from.
Yeah. A little plug for your meetup too. It's very, I like the approach that you're taking with that meetup. very friendly and open meetup, and not like the, a lot of them that I've been to have kind of that sales feel to it. And yours,
no sales.
You had no sales to it. And it was just really open and friendly and easy to, you know, and people were doing deals, that were coming to it. And a lot of, that's the other thing. A lot of the meetups, you know, it's all new investors. None of them have done a deal, and yours had a mixture, a good mixture too.
Yep. I appreciate that.
So yeah, great meetup. If anybody's in Cincinnati and wants to check out your meetup.
Well, you don't even live in Cincy, but you attended.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd like to attend again, but you know, it's hard to get there during that.
Fair enough.
Unfortunately, I can't plan my trips around that meetup. my wife would kill me if I've gone all the time. So tell us about what your goals are moving forward, you know, in the next, let's say 5 or 10 years.
Well, I'm 35 years old. My goal is to control $1 billion by my 40th. And I think of that as creating $1 billion worth of value to others by my 40th birthday. We're at 265 million right now. My business partner and I, our company, and we're closing on a deal a month exactly, less than a month now, from now in Fort Worth. And that's going to put us, you know, around a little over 300 million. So we'll be at a billion by my 40th, which is about 4 years or so from now, 4.5 years from now. And I give back, there's give back components in everything I do, either directly or indirectly. So when we achieve that goal, we'll have given a whole lot of value back along the way. I'm not waiting until that goal is reached. I'm doing it along the way. Jim Rohn, the personal development guy who Tony Robbins learned from, he talked about that, where he suggested that we start giving now, and I'm at a different financial situation than I was a couple of years ago, and et cetera, but I've been giving back for a while when I wasn't in the financial situation I'm in now, which is markedly, you know, better and continues to get better and better and better through the deals we do. But I've always had a give back component. And I believe it's important to do that. Whenever I left my job, and I had about 50,000 in the bank, and that was from a refinance I did on one of my homes. And I didn't really have any other money coming in. I had the four homes, but I mean, for any single family home investors, you have about four homes. You might be able to empathize with me. You made $250 a month, but then someone moves out and there's $5,000 that you got to pay, and boom, all your profits get wiped away. So I didn't really have income coming in, but I still funded a scholarship that brought a student from Texas Tech, where I went to school, to New York City for the weekend, and allowed them to shadow different advertising agencies. And I've been doing that for 6 years now. Last 6 years, I've been funding that trip. So yeah, I've done it even through the lean times, and it's important to do that. So what are my goals? It's to give back along the way, and to continue to give back more and more and more. And then, you know, I know, as I said at the very beginning of our conversation, the law of reciprocity, things are just going to take care of themselves.
Yeah. Well, that's, yeah, you're right. So you've got, you know, all these apartment communities, and you're continuing to, your goal is to get to this billion under controllable assets. How are you continuing in this type of market to find deals that work, you know, for your investment strategy?
By this type of market, you mean really competitive, money's cheap, and sellers are unreasonable?
Yep, you got it.
Yeah. Yeah.
How'd you nail that?
Yeah, well, I'm living and breathing it.
Yeah.
It's very challenging, and the solution is to underwrite a whole lot of deals.
Yeah.
I get an email a day, literally at least one email a day. And I'm not counting people who email me multiple times from investors who ask me, when's the next deal? When's the next deal? And we could have gotten about five deals between the last deal and today, but they would have been off-market deals, and they're off-market deals where the seller is so unrealistic about what the value is. We want it to go to market because then we'll bid on it at a market rate versus what the seller wants. The off-market deals right now, for the most part, this is a generalization, so there's exceptions. For the most part, the off-market deals are worse than the on-market deals right now. So how do we do it? We underwrite a lot of deals. We are proven to be closers within the Dallas-Fort Worth and Houston markets that we have our portfolio in. So, you know, brokers know and owners know, hey, if they tie, if they have something under contract, they're going to close unless, you know, something crazy happens. And we do have earnest money hard day one. So that gives them another level of comfort. I mean, we've got 200,000 hard day one in most deals. And then another $200,000 after 30 days hard. So, you know, they've also got a level of comfort. So there's no secret answer other than underwrite a lot of deals. And so how do you get the deal flow? Well, you get the deal flow through multiple channels that you can research and implement. One is brokers. That's an easy one. Unless you don't have experience, then it's more challenging. Then you got to have a team to really bring up your level of experience and credibility with the brokers. Two is just finding the deals yourself. I've interviewed people on my podcast who are buying 150 plus unit deals right now and going direct to the owner. And they're finding them by simply driving the area, looking up the contact info, and then calling, texting, and mailing them stuff. It works. You go through a lot. And when I interviewed this gentleman on my podcast about it, he said afterwards, I wish he would have said during our recorded call, but he said afterwards, he said, the reason why I told you this is because most people aren't going to take the time to do it. It goes back to what I was, you know, what I was talking about earlier in our conversation, the instant gratification and the shiny object syndrome that just we've got as a culture right now. And, you know, fine, whatever, you know, some people can choose to do that, but people who listen to your podcast or listen to mine who are overachievers and seeking ways to get the information they can implement in the tactics and in reality, we together, we're not going to have that shiny object syndrome. We are going to be consistent. We are going to do the things that are proven to do to be effective. It's just not going to happen overnight.
Yeah. Yeah. What's your favorite book that you're reading right now?
33 Strategies of War by Robert Greene. I am about one chapter from being complete.
Interesting. I've never heard of that one. Last question before we wrap up. What's your definition of the secret to financial freedom?
The secret to financial freedom is simply having passive income that exceeds your expenses and, you know, fund money. So just all your monthly expenses. Financial abundance. You asked for the secret or the definition?
Secret.
Oh, secret. Sorry. So I was giving you the definition. The secret. Work harder on yourself than you do your job. That's yeah.
Cool. So last thing is, how can we reach you?
Well, for all of For apartment investors who want more info on that, I've got an apartment resources guide I'll give to you for free. Just email info@joefairless.com. That's info@joefairless.com. And that's a resources guide that's got all sorts of good resources, from books to podcasts to websites to do market research, things like that. And then if you're interested in developing a relationship with me long-term and potentially partnering on a future deal, then you can go to investwithjoe.com and fill out that form.
Awesome. And then go to your podcast too as well, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Just search my name in iTunes and yeah. Podcast will come up.
Awesome. Awesome, Joe. I appreciate you being on the show and taking time out of your day to spend with us and sharing all your valuable insight.
Hey, great catching up with you, and looking forward to seeing you soon.
Sounds great. Have a good rest of the day.
All right, you too.
Bye. Hey, special thanks to Joe Fairless for joining us on the show. Really appreciate his time that he was able to spend with us and the valuable insight Joe has given to us. So three things I took from this episode. First of all, identify where you're lacking and fix it. And as Joe said, he was lacking really in everything. And so he learned how to fix it. He partnered with the right people. He studied the right things that he knew he could get strengths on. And then from there, he was able to then start buying apartment buildings, and not just start, but really crush it in apartment buildings. So he figured out where he was lacking, and he fixed it, and he fixed it the right way. And now, he's got over 3,000 units. He's done nearly 1,300 podcast episodes. So, I mean, he did it, and he did it very well. So the other thing he talks about is be responsive. And I think that is, as Joel mentioned too, is most people aren't responsive. They say what you want to hear, and then they don't actually follow through. And Joe talks about being responsive. I mean, being that person that everybody goes, wow, he actually is a man or woman of their word. And they care about what they say. And so many people don't. I think a lot of people just want to tell you what you think they think you want to hear. And then that's it. And they don't understand what they're doing. And so if you can be responsive, respond back to people right away, tell them what you're going to do and follow through with that, that's going to get you a lot farther than doing the opposite. And then the last thing that he said is be resourceful. And I guess that kind of goes along with finding what you're lacking and then fix it. But it, you know, maybe adds on to that. Be resourceful. Find the solution to the problem. There's always going to be problems in your business, and you have to find the solutions to those problems. How do we continue to buy? We're in a hot market right now. What's the solution? How do we continue to buy? Joe has continued to buy, and he hasn't deviated from his formula. So how do you continue to be successful? What do you do to get yourself there? So awesome episode with Joe. I really appreciate him taking time out of his day. Super busy guy. So great for him to take time with us. Go on to our podcast on iTunes and search for us, and then give us a rating and review. We'd love to hear what you think. And also you can go on our Facebook page and tell us, you know, what you think about our podcast. And if you've got any questions for us that we can answer during our Hump Day Hustle, we'd love to hear from you as well. So that is it. I'm Todd Dexheimer. I'm signing out. Make every day a Saturday.
Are you ready to start investing in real estate today but don't know where to start? Sometimes investing can seem way too complicated, but it actually couldn't be any easier than with homeinvest.com. You know the co-founder and my friend Nate Armstrong. He appeared on episode 20, and if you haven't heard it, go back and listen to it, episode number 20. Home Invest is a company that allows you to invest in turnkey real estate. Their goal is to build powerful investment tools that make real estate investing accessible to everyone. They have contractors and property managers available for you with the click of your mouse. While other real estate agents can only offer a property, Home Invest brings you a full turnkey package that allows you to diversify your investments, earn passive income, and start building equity in properties. Their simple, intuitive design allows newcomers and experienced investors alike to hit the ground running and to be able to choose the properties when they want and where they want. View easy to understand charts and data to allow you to buy in only a few clicks or just a simple phone call. With Home Invest, you'll be building your portfolio as quickly or as slowly as you would like. And right now, Home Invest is giving our listeners, Pillar of Wealth Creation listeners, a free course on how to finally win in real estate investing. So go to homeinvest.com/pillars. That's homeinvest.com/pillars to claim your free course today.